Hello, and thank you for joining us today. This is the first episode of a new affiliate-focused branch of the UF Care podcast. The goal for these conversations is to talk with early career professionals studying addiction research here at the University of Florida and to provide advice and support for those attempting to enter the field. My name is Victor, and I am a graduate student here at the University of Florida, working with the lab of Dr. Jeff Boisineau, studying addiction, substance abuse, and the interaction with pain. Today, our guest is Ben Berry, another PhD candidate here. Ben, if you could just introduce yourself real quick.
Sure. Well, first, thank you guys so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm a fifth-year PhD candidate in the Department of Health Education and Behavior up the hill at the University of Florida.
Super cool. Well, Ben, could you tell us a little bit about your research, your work? I understand you're looking into addiction and other things.
Yeah, so our lab primarily focuses on alcohol administration methods to test brief interventions that are more technology-based in scope. So we've worked on a couple different studies that have looked at how we can integrate forms of technology-based tools into already existing brief interventions. Mm-hmm. So in one study, we adapted kind of like a motivational interviewing-based brief intervention, and we paired it with three different forms of technology that were aimed at reducing one's blood alcohol concentration. Mm-hmm. And then pairing those two, we tested it in the lab. Each participant was randomized to one of three forms of technology, and then they were allowed to use all three in the real world for 2 weeks.
Okay.
We just finished up that study, and we're working on the write-up and kind of going through some of the results. So that was one of the studies. Another study we're currently conducting is looking to see whether a new alcohol biosensor, it's the Backtrack Skin, it's kind of like a, looks like a Fitbit, if you will.
Yeah,
it's able to detect alcohol as it evaporates through your skin, and mm-hmm. it gets transdermal alcohol concentration readings. And we're just testing to see if this new form of technology works as advertised, and then also does it work differently for persons living with and without HIV.
Okay. What are your hypotheses for that study?
So I think as far as the hypotheses go, one, it's really more so an aim than a hypothesis, is just what is the validity and reliability of this thing? We mm-hmm. know with the SCRAM device, it's been validated. We know it works. Mm-hmm. But there are tons of barriers to using it, stigma being one of the main drivers. Mm-hmm. So if there's something that's much more non-invasive, that essentially does just as good of a job, or if not better than the SCRAM, how could we apply that to interventions? So really, it's just does it work? That's the main aim.
Yeah. And what is the SCRAM?
The SCRAM, I don't remember the full acronym, but it's like the ankle bracelet mm-hmm. one would wear if they are sentenced to house arrest or something like that. The mm-hmm. big bulky thing that you put on your ankle.
Right.
We know that's validated. We know it works. We know it can detect, relatively speaking, low levels of alcohol in the system. And we're just testing it compared to that, but then also compared to breath alcohol readings mm-hmm. with your standard intoxilizer.
And the thing that you're testing is like, I don't know if I've read about this before. It's like a patch or a thing that it goes like slightly under the skin?
Imagine just a Fitbit.
Okay. It just sort of rests on the skin. And how does it work?
Nah. So I know how to use it, but if we're getting down to like the nitty gritty, that I'm not 100%
biophysiology,
sure.
Biophysiology,
let's
dive
right, in. Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's do this. I don't know that we're going to need more than 20 minutes for
sure,
that.
Sure, sure.
But I think generally the idea behind it is alcohol is excreted through the body a few different ways. Mm-hmm. One of the ways is it gets evaporated through the skin in very, very small amounts. Mm-hmm. And there's a pretty sensitive sensor on this thing that is mm-hmm. able to somehow pick that alcohol up as it's evaporating through the skin.
Is it like an electronic device where like beep, or does it like change color?
Nope. I mean, it's completely, I mean, you wouldn't even know it's on if you were wearing it.
Huh.
And then it just, all of the data gets stored up to the Backtrack secure like cloud server. And then you get transdermal alcohol concentration readings.
Wow.
So I think the next step from there would be to convert. How are we able to convert transdermal alcohol concentration to breath alcohol concentration? Mm-hmm. I naively thought, well, you just get a mathematician and they come up with some fancy equation, and then there you go.
Just need an algorithm.
Yeah, right.
Everything's
algorithms. How hard can this be? And I found out pretty quickly. Well, a lot harder than I gave it credit for. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of one of the things we're building towards.
And you mentioned you're testing this with populations with HIV and without.
Yeah.
Is there an expected way it would work differently in terms of those populations, or are you just testing for like usage validity?
I think it's usage validity, but also potentially some interactions between HIV status or CD4 count or things like that in rates of alcohol absorption and metabolism. Okay. So just looking to see, does it work the same? Does it produce similar readings? Just because there's a lot of literature out there showing that we could be doing a better job with interventions specifically geared towards persons living with HIV. Mm-hmm. And this could be a really cool, non-invasive, you know, in real time tool mm-hmm. To help persons living with HIV who want to reduce their drinking if that's what their end goal is.
That's really cool.
Thank you.
What is your end goal then with this research? If everything works out exactly the way you hope, what do you do with it then?
I mean, I think so the mechanism for this particular study with the wrist sensor is an R21. So it's smaller in scale. We're really not able to test, you know, with a lot of variables, particular interactions. So is there an age by, you know, whether you're HIV positive or negative status, mm-hmm. Things like that. So I think really just kind of turning it into an R01, where maybe you could do different alcohol administration sessions paired with something in the field. So mm-hmm. we give everybody three standard drinks, or just three beers that they have to consume over a 90-minute period, mm-hmm. which is beneficial in some ways. But it would be cool to see if you could somehow do like a fixed dose with self-administration piece. So we want to know, are we able to detect low levels of alcohol and then high levels of alcohol, and just kind of looking at how sensitive is this at specific readings. Mm-hmm. And because it's not truly fixed dose, you have some people that on the smaller side are getting up to, you know, 0.06, 0.08. And then you have much larger people that are only getting to a 0.3 or 0.03, 0.04. So just, I think probably more sessions would be kind of mm-hmm. like a next step to kind of just look at timing, dosage. How does that all relate to how well this thing actually mm-hmm. works?
To keep learning about how it works, what populations this device works the best for, and then how can you use that reading to improve, you know, treatment and health behaviors and all that stuff moving forward?
Definitely. And I think that's where NIAAA is going with it. My background and my research interests more so lie on the etiology side of things. Mm-hmm. And one of my main research interests is subjective response, or just how people perceive the effects of alcohol. Mm-hmm. I would be really interested to see how rates of alcohol absorption and metabolism also relate to the perceived effects of alcohol. Mm-hmm. And traditionally, the only way to get at that is just breathalyze somebody repeatedly every couple minutes, which is
what we do in our studies.
Right. So, and as I'm sure, just like our participants in our studies, they're not huge fans of having to do this breathalyzer just repeatedly over and over and over. So if you could just get a continuous measure of mm-hmm. rate of which one absorbs or metabolizes alcohol and how that relates to the perceived effects of mm-hmm. alcohol and other known risk factors, I think it really could advance the science in that way as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Sounds like it's got that potential.
Definitely.
That's really cool, Ben.
Thank you.
So what are you excited about moving forward in this field? You've talked about where you want to go in this particular line of research, what sort of grant functions you'd want to explore in the future. I guess this ties into like a linear question. How did you get here, and what do you want to do with it long term?
So how did I get here was a little serendipitous. I did my bachelor's at Arizona State, mm-hmm. and I was in my third or fourth year, and I was looking for some new research labs, and I was really interested in studying bipolar and schizophrenia at the time. Mm-hmm. And I was taking a class with a friend, and I was telling him about this, and I said, you know, I can't find anybody that's doing this kind of research, but mm-hmm. I'm really interested in it. And they said, well, Ben, you know, I'm in a lab right now that does alcohol administration and deals more broadly with, you know, substance use, substance misuse, and addiction. And it's, you know, different, but also related in a lot of ways. It could be a good fit for you. And it happened to be Will Corbin's lab. And I ended up interviewing, and I got a position in his lab. And once I got there and saw that alcohol administration, that's research, I was hooked pretty mm-hmm. immediately that's what one could do for their career research wise.
Right.
So from there, it kind of led me to the University of Florida. I was applying for graduate schools and didn't get in one cycle. And Will said, I've got a collaborator, Rob Lehman, who's just moving to Florida. It's not clinical psych, but a lot of the research that he's doing is similar to what we're doing. And if you're interested, you should, you know, you should check it out. And I did, and I reached out to Rob, and we had a couple Skype interviews, and next thing you know, I'm packing up a U-Haul and driving across the country.
That's how it goes, right?
Yeah.
That's the graduate dream.
Exactly. And then once I got here, it's been an incredible experience. My research interests have really aligned well with Rob's. So I think it's made it a lot easier kind of transition into just getting the skills and the training that I want to learn, mm-hmm. and then kind of how I'm going to apply that moving forward.
Mm-hmm. That's excellent. And you'll be graduating in August of this year, 2020.
Yeah.
And then you'll be Dr. Barry.
I'll be Dr. Barry. It's I can't believe it.
Well, Ben, I think that is about the time that we're going to have for this conversation. I want to thank you again for joining today.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Awesome.